Morning. Today's daf from Sachem Chof. We are in Yud Tesamun Beis. We're towards the bottom of the Amud. We are continuing our discussion. Yesterday, we quoted a Mishnah in Adios. We are here in the first parak of Sachem. We are learning Rabbi Chanina, Sgan HaKohanim, the sugya that began back on Yud Dalet and now is going to come to a conclusion. We're actually not going to finish the parak today. We're going to get to the bottom of Yud Tzor Hashem. We're going to get to the bottom of Chof Amud Beis. And we'll leave ourselves off just a little bit left of the first parak and a little bit of Tomatara over for tomorrow. Our discussion has been primarily all circulating around the Mishnah on Yud Dalet. The Mishnah on Yud Dalet brought down the Shitas of Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKohanim together with the Shita of Rabbi Kiva. And then the subsequent machlokis between Rameir and Rabbi Yossi. So hopefully after now 6 days of having gone through that Mishnah and going through the ins and outs of that Mishnah, so hopefully we have the Mishnah down well. In the meantime, the Gemara yesterday opened up one more discussion from Tumat Tahara, and that's the Mishnah in Adios. Now, what does the Mishnah in Adios have anything to do with our discussion? And the answer seemingly is not much, but it has to do with Tumat Tahara, and we did quote a Mishnah in Adios yesterday at the conclusion of the Sugya. So it was an excuse for the Gemara. The Gemara looked for an excuse over here to talk about Tumat Tahara, because as we noted already numerous times, there are no Gemaras on Seder Taharos. Truth be told, is that obviously there is one Masechta in Seder Taharos that does have a Gemara attached to it, and that of course is Masechta Nida. But outside of that, the rest of Seder Taharos is without Gemara. And so when the Gemara has an opportunity to talk about Tumat Tahara, so the Gemara will do so. So here we are, 7 blad tucked away at the end of the first parak of Pesachim, discussing Tumat Tahara, a Mishnah in Adios, where I'm back on Yud Tesamun Aleph, just reviewing the Mishnah. The Mishnah taught us machash nimsis bebasar. So if I have a needle found in the basar, the flesh over here is belonging to an animal, a carbon that was shecht in the base of Mikdash. And the Mishnah teaches us the sakim vayadayim taharos, that the knife and the hands are tahor. However, the basar is going to be tamei, the meat is going to be tamei. However, nimsis beperish. But if the needle is found in the excrement of the animal, so everything is going to be tahor. And then Rabbi Kiva says achinu. That there is no Tumas Yadayim in the Beis HaMikdash, because if the Chachamim would have extended Tumas Yadayim to the Beis HaMikdash, so then there would be a proliferation of Tuma in the area of the Mikdash, the Makom HaMikdash. So Rabbi Akiva teaches us, Baruch Hashem, that the Chachamim did not. This Mishnah over here, so there are a number of points that the Gemara dealt with, and the point that we're in the middle of discussing is a simple question about the nature of the needle, and what exactly is going to be the status of the needle, and why are we assuming that the needle itself is tamei? You found a needle in the animal, yesher koach. So, but the idea that needle in fact is going to be tamei. So at best it's a safek. And what do we say about safek kalim? So remember yesterday we quoted a Mishnah Shkalim. We said that when it comes to a safek kli in Yerushalayim, so we're going to be makel. So it's a little bit strange that we're going to be machmir over here with a needle found inside of the animal. So the Gemara had two approaches to this question yesterday, and let's just quickly review the two approaches. Rav Yehuda Merav says that the needle belonged to a tamei mace, meaning the needle itself came into contact with a tamei mace, and we recognize the needle, meaning that the needle found in the animal is in fact the needle that we know historically was tamei tumas mace. Okay, so basically, the answer is that we know the history of this particular needle. The second approach of the Gemara is that the animal was muzzled before it was brought into Yerushalayim. And so, therefore, this needle, we don't know its origins. However, the suffix did not start in Yerushalayim. The suffix actually started outside Yerushalayim because the animal was muzzled before it got into Yerushalayim. So, the only way that the animal could have ingested the needle is only prior to its entrance into Yerushalayim. Good. On the first answer of the Gemara has a couple of follow-up questions. We're going to pick it up back up a couple of lines. Ula Rav de Amar. So we are in the Gemara. We're going to start about 10 lines from the bottom, a dozen lines from the bottom. The Amar, the first words in the line. On Yud Tesamun Beis, Ula Rav de Amar, Kegon Shenevda, Shavdala Macha, Tamei Meis, Vihikira Bebasar. So let's go over this answer of Rav. Right? Rav Yehuda B'Shem Rav said, the needle under discussion is a needle that we all recognized. And yet, it was tamei tumas mace, and that was the needle that was found within the basar of the animal. To which the Gemara says, Kevin Damar Bechal Cherev Cherev Harehu Kechalal Adam Vekelem Nami Li Tamei. So the Gemara has such a wonderful follow-up question, and that is that the Adam, the Kli, should be Tamei, meaning we know that metal is a superconductor of Tumah. Unlike general conduction of Tumah, where what ends up happening is that the Tumah drops down a level every time there's a transmission, but when metal is involved and specific to Tumas Mace, so then the conduction is going to be so strong that's going to be on the same level. So the needle now should be an avatumah. If the needle's an avatumah, so why stop at saying that the buser is going to be tameh, meaning buser over here falling under the category of ochlim? I don't understand. Even adam v'kelim should become tameh from the needle. And the Mishnah Nedios does not say that. So Amar Avashi Zosemeris, Azara v'shos harabim mi v'havalei safik tumah v'shos harabim v'chol safik tumah v'shos harabim sveko tahor. So the Gemara's response is, well, this is occurring in the Azara. The Azara of the Beis HaMikdash has the status of Rishus HaRabim. When you have a Safik Tumah Rishus HaRabim, so we're going to say Sveko Tahor. Okay, so that is the Gemara's response in terms of how it is, why it is that we're going to be Mekel regarding Adam V'Kelim, because on that, we're going to say that it falls under the category of Safik Tumah Rishus HaRabim. So the Gemara says, Haber Rishus Yachid Sveko Tameh. Now, the obvious implication would be is that if we took the same scenario, and instead of having a public area, we're going to have a private area. And remember, we point this out many times, but it's so correct, and it's worthwhile going over. When we talk about this distinction between Rishus Eich and Rishus Rabin, when it comes to a suffix on Tumah, first of all, the source of it is from Sota, which we're not going to go through right now, but that's the Makor HaLacha. Secondly, when we talk about the definition of Rishus Yachin Rishus Rabim, so it does not follow the definitions of Rishus Yachin Rishus Rabim as it relates to Shabbos. By Shabbos, it is a structural difference between the two of them. Rishus Yachin is surrounded by minimum three walls, and it's gonna be 10 tefachim high. And we went over that numerous times in Masechta for Shabbos, and we spent a lot of time with that at the end of Erevin in the 10th Perek. When it comes to Rishus Yachin versus Rishus Rabim as it relates to Tumah Tahara, we just simply mean, is it a populated area or is it not a populated area? The Azara vis-a-vis Tumah is absolutely a populated area. There are people in the Azara all the time, mostly Kohanim. But nevertheless, that's a populated area. Therefore, it is a Rishus HaRabim. And so therefore, when we have a Suffolk, Rishus HaRabim, Suffolk Tumah, Rishus HaRabim, so the halacha is Sveko Tahor, we're going to be Mekel. So the Gemara says, okay, but that means to say then that if it's Rishus HaYachid, so then we're going to be Machmir. And the Gemara says, I have a problem with that. So Mikti, Hai Macha, Davashim Bodasli Shalhu, Vichol Davashim Bodasli Shal, Bain Bershus Rabin, Bain Bershus Yachid, Sveko Tahor. So the Gemara says, now we're talking about a needle over here. Now, as I mentioned just moments earlier, the halacha of Safik Tameh Bershus Rabin, so that's learned by Sota. Now, Sota has nothing to do with Tumah Tahara in the sense of purity and impurity, but the Torah describing the man who is together with a wife of somebody else in a secluded room. So the Torah uses the language of Tumah over there, which means then that the halachas of Safik Tumah are drawn from the model, the prototype of Sota. Now, in the case of Sota, a man and a woman are secluded in a room. She's married to another man, which means that she is Ashes Ish to this man, and they're secluded in a room together. And the halach is that seclusion itself, if it was preceded with a kinui, if there was a warning, and now there was a seclusion, so she becomes Usher to her husband. Again, that's the beginning of Masechta Sota. Good. In the meantime, however, the halacha is very clear. Since the halachas of Safik Tumah are learned from a Sota, so that means to say that you have to follow, it has to match the prototype. Just like the prototype Yesh Bo Das Lishal, we're talking about people who are thinking people and who can answer questions. Not to say, of course, they're going to answer the questions honestly, meaning if you ask them the question, what happened in that secluded room? The truth of the matter is, whatever their answer is, we're not going to listen to their answer. But the fact of the matter is that we could ask them the question and they could answer, which means then that the halachas of Safik Tumah, as to the distinction to be made between Rishus HaRabim and Rishus HaYachid, are all going to be predicated on whether or not the Safik, the source of the Safik, is coming from an entity that can answer questions, otherwise known as a conscious individual. If we're talking about an inanimate object, which in this case we're talking about the needle, so then we should not apply the rules of Safik Tumah Rishus HaRabim and Sveko Tahor. But rather, if it's an inanimate object, what should we say? It's a simple Safik. And if the Safik is on a Dinda Araisa, so we should be Machmir. So the Gemara says, Chol Davashim Bodasli Shal Bein Rishus HaRabim, Ben Rishos Yachid Sveko Tara. Allow me, please, to correct myself. In other words, here, I'm sorry, if it's a suffix Sheim Bo Dasli Shal, so then we're in fact going to be Mekel, we're not going to be Machmer. Okay. So the Gemara says, Mishum Davi Suffik Tama Hababi De Adam. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the needle under discussion over here is Babi De Adam. The needle was handled by a person. And Vamar Rav Yochanan Suffik Tama Hababi De Adam, Nishan Allah, Afilu Bikli Amunach Agabe Karka, Bedavar, Kid Davar Sheish Bo Dasli Shal. So the Gemara says, once the needle is handled by an individual, so even though the question of Tumah is on the needle, and even though the needle itself, obviously, an inanimate object, you cannot have a conversation with a needle, it would be extraordinarily one-sided. Nevertheless, since the person's handling the needle, so therefore, it's as if we're going to, we're just using the phrase over here, don't mean it literally, we're going to animate the needle, meaning the halachas of Das now can extend to the needle, so that now the halachas of Safik Tumah Rishus Rabim versus Rishus Yachid would apply to a needle that was handled by a person. Which means then, of course, that really the Safik Tumah is going to be covering most everything. Meaning as long as there's human involvement in the Safik, so then we're going to say that there's a distinction between Rishus Yachid versus Rishus Rabim. Okay. So anyway, so that brings us to the end of that section. We continue in the Gemara, we're in Chaf Amar Aleph. V'habasar Tameh, ha'basar diskash remai. Now, in that Mishnah in Adios, we're still there. And for the first half of today's daf, we're going to be finishing up with this Mishnah in Adios and seeking to get better understanding of this Mishnah. So now the Gemara wants to know that the needle now is going to be Metame, the Basar. And the question, of course, is why should the needle be Metame, the Basar, in order for it to become Tame? So it needs Hechsher. So it needs to first come into contact with the liquid. The Basar, of course, is an Ochel. It is a food. As such, with any ochel is not mekabel tumah until it comes into contact b'ratzon with one of the seven liquids. And so over here, you shechten an animal. So the meat, obviously, it is, and the Gemara is going to make this point in just a moment, it's swimming in its own biological juices, but nevertheless, it needs to come into contact with one of the seven liquids in order for it to be mukshel kabel tumah. The Mishnah Adio says that the needle is going to be metame the basar. The basar yet is not been prepped for tumah. So that's the Gemara's question. V'abasar, tame ha-basar diskash remai. So how did the meat become mukshel kabel tumah? Inema. The Gemara is going to go through a total of four different suggestions. Some the Gemara will reject, some the Gemara will accept. So the first suggestion of the Gemara is diskash b'dam. Well, maybe the hechsher came about through blood. So in other words, you shechted the animal, now you have the dam coming out of the animal and making contact with itself, with its own body. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that's just simply not a machshir. We already made this point earlier. We made this point just a couple of days ago. We get to review. And the Gemara darshins, dam shenishbach kamayim machshir, v'shenu nishbach kamayim eino machshir. So we learn together that dam kachim, the blood of kachim, are simply not going to be a machshir. It does not follow the drasha of ala aretz tishpachanu kamayim. Only blood that's going to be spilled on the ground like water, that blood and only that blood is going to be serving as a machshir. Dam kachim, the blood of a carbon, needs to be collected in a bowl, and so therefore it is just simply not included in the category of dam that is a machshir. Gemara rejects the first suggestion. We're on to our second suggestion. Ve'ela diskasher b'mashke beis mitbachaya. So the Gemara says, what about all the liquids in the shlach house? Now it's not a shlach house, it's the azara. But on the northern side of the azara, where you're doing all your shechting, and after your shechting, you're doing the cleaning of these animals. So over there, aside from all the blood, there's also water, which is used to clean the animals. So isn't that going to be the machshir? The Gemara says, no, it's not. V'hamar Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina Mashke, basement b'chay lo dain shein dachein, elo shein machshirin. Another point that we already went over just a couple days ago, and that is that the liquids in the Beis HaMikdash, not only are they not mekabel tumah, we discussed that extensively back on Tet Zayin, but on top of that, they also are not going to be serving as a machshir as well. Good. So we reject that suggestion as well. We're up to our third suggestion. So the Gemara says, what about Chibas HaKodesh? The idea of Chibas HaKodesh, which we just touched on, and now we get to say over again, is that Chibas HaKodesh allows for extra sensitivity to Tuma in the area of the Beis HaMikdash. Because now you're dealing with higher levels of Kedusha, so therefore it affords for higher sensitivity and more eligibility for Toma. Now, the truth of the matter is, even before we discuss Chibas HaKodesh in the specific over here, we already know this idea. Meaning, consider what we've already gone over now numerous times in the last week. That when it's Chulin, it only goes up to a Sheni. When it's Truma, which means that it's more Kedusha, it goes up to a Shlishi. So when it's Kodesh, so now it goes up to a Revi. So already we have this idea in our head, but Chibas HaKodesh actually goes even beyond that. Now, in yesterday's daf, if you recall, so we use Chibas HaKodesh to discuss how it is that even foods which are not foods are nevertheless still going to be susceptible to Tumma. Remember yesterday's Gemara in your testament Aleph. So HaKli Mitzarif as Masha Batoch LaKodesh, and Rabbi Kiva added onto that list things like Lavona, Gachalim, so frankincense and coals. So those things are inedible, and yet because they're used in the context of the Avoda, in the Beis HaMikdash, therefore they're going to be Mekabel Tumma, even though it's not an Ochel. Okay, good. That's one application of Chibas HaKodesh that we saw in yesterday's daf. And here now we get to see another application of Chibas HaKodesh, and that is Chibas HaKodesh will allow something to become Tameh, even though it was not Mukhshir L'Kabel Tumma. Good. So that's the Gemara suggestion over here, that Chibas HaKodesh is what is allowing the Basar to become Tameh, despite the fact that it does not have Hechshir. So the Gemara says, "Emer d'hamahani lechibas hakadosh lefsu legufei lemimne beirisha mesheni nami." So the Gemara says, "Well, if that's true, and now you're telling me that even though the meat, the buster, has not been prepped with any one of the liquids, but because of chibas hakadosh, now it is going to be ready and eligible to receive tuma." So the Gemara says, "If that's true, so what are we talking about over here? We're talking about where it just simply becomes disqualified puzzle." Are we talking about where it becomes like a bona fide Vlada Tumma, where we're going to be counting Rishon Sheni, and the Gemara says, to what degree are we talking about? So Tifshu Dabai Reish Lakish, you know, it's funny, Reish Lakish asks exactly this question back in Chulin, also in Menachos. Reish Lakish asks this question. Tzirisho Menachos, Monebo Rishon V'Sheni Olo. You know, let's say you have a clump of the Mincha. Mincha is a composite, it is a combination of oil and flour, and you have to mix them together. Now, truth of the matter is you have to add enough oil so they could mix together. And now, obviously, you should be mixing them together, but you don't have to. And what you could very well have are just simply clumps of flour that do not have any oil that's mixed in together with them. So what are we going to say regarding that? Are we going to be counting them as a Rishon Hasheni? That's flour that never came into contact with a liquid. So if it comes into contact with Tuma, it's going to become Tamei. Aye, but that flour never came into contact with the oil. Now, granted, by the way, it goes back to yesterday's discussion, it is in a bowl together with other flour, and the discussion of whether or not the bowl itself unifies everything inside of it, okay, that was yesterday's discussion, but apart from that discussion, meaning the flour that did not come into contact with the oil, so if now, let's say, it itself came into contact with Tuma, is it going to be susceptible to Tuma? So it didn't come into contact with the liquid, the answer should be no, but again, Chibas HaKodesh tells us yes. Chibas HaKodesh tells us now that the heightened Kedusha is going to give it a heightened sensitivity to Tumma. Now, the Gemara is asking the question over here. This is a question of Reish Lakish. So what kind of Tumma are we talking about? Are we talking about where it just becomes disqualified puzzle? Like a Shlishi by Truma. Is it just puzzle? Or are we calling it Tumma in the most classic sense? Counting the Rishon, counting the Sheni, etc., etc. Now, the question of Reish Lakish goes unanswered over there. And so over here, using the answer of Chibas HaKodesh seemingly would give us insight into this question of Reish Lakish, and the Gemara is simply pointing out that Reish Lakish himself didn't have clarity on this issue. So is the Gemara rejecting the suggestion? I'm not sure. But we go on in the Gemara. Am Rav Yehuda Amar Shmoke Gon Shaisa Parasho Ziv Cheshlamin Ve'avir Benar V'shachta V'adayin Mashke Tofech Aleham. Okay, so, and the fourth answer of the Gemara, which the Gemara offers, with no pushback, and that is, here's what happened. We were walking the animal to the base of Mikdash. The animal was walking through a stream of water. After the animal walked through the stream of water, so now the animal was saturated with that water. By the time the animal got to the base of Mikdash, there was still water on the animal, on the surface area of the animal, and so therefore, after you shechted the animal, now the buster comes into contact with that liquid, and that liquid is now going to be serving as the machsher. Obviously, It's got to be Baratzon. Okay, the Gemara doesn't deal with that over here, but okay, that is going to be now a fourth suggestion. So the Mishnah Nedio says that the needle is metame the basar. The Gemara here on Chaf Amud Aleph and Pesachim asks a simple question: how did the Basta become Mokshe L'Kavul Tumah? And the Gemara now has just given four different suggestions. The first two clearly rejected, but four different suggestions as to how it is the Basta becomes Mokshe L'Kavul Tumah. We're continuing in the Gemara. We're in Chaf Amud Aleph Nimsis Beperesh Hakol Tahor. So the Gemara says, now if the needle is found in the excrement, so everything is going to be Tahor. Now the thinking behind that would be that the excrement is something that is separate from the animal, right? It is the waste material of the animal, and it is no longer considered part and parcel of the animal, and presumably, even though the needle was found in the excrement, in the GI tract, nevertheless, it is going, the meat is not going to be tameh, because the needle is encapsulated, it is insulated within the excrement. So the Gemara's question over here is, v'nimsis beperes hakol tahor, v'niyadra peres v'nitme labasar. So the Gemara over here asks a somewhat indelicate question, but okay. In other words, we're dealing with tumat tahara. So why don't we say that the needle should be metame the excrement, and then the excrement in turn should be metame the basar. So amar rav adra ba'ava beperes ava. So the Gemara's first answer is that the excrement over here is solid. So the stool sample over here, it's not a sample, but the stool over here is extraordinarily solid, and therefore what? Therefore has the status of being an ochel. Now, we go back to what we've already said a couple of times in the sugya of Rabbi Chanina's Gan HaKohanim, and that ochel is not metame ochel. So over here, even if we're going to be regarding the peres as ochel, now, I know probably what you are already at this point thinking. I'm thinking the same thing, and in a moment the Gemara is going to say it. But nevertheless, right now the Gemara is viewing the peres as a ochel. Right, I understand that's very unusual, but nevertheless, right now the Gemara is sidestepping the issue by simply saying that the peres is an ochel. It is a thick constitution. It is more substance than it is liquid, and therefore it's not going to be matam the basar. So Rav Ashi Amar Afilo Tema Beperes Raka, and Rav Ashi says you don't have to say that. You could say that the stool over here is very thin. It's almost it's a liquid, and nevertheless we're not going to have a problem. Why not? So because Mishum Davi Mashke Saruach. Because it is something which is disgusting, and as something which is disgusting, it doesn't have the status of being an ochel, does not have the status of being a mashke, and so as a result of that, it's simply not going to be a conductor of tumah. Tumah is only conducted either by an ochel or by a mashke, and over here the excrement is neither an ochel or a mashke. Okay, it is difficult, admittedly, it's difficult to understand the havamin of the Gemara, where the Gemara for a moment entertained the idea that the perish, that the excrement is going to be viewed as either an ochel or a mashke. Okay. Tanitana kama de Rav Sheshes. The following brisa was said over in front of Rav Sheshes. And for a good part of the remaining section of today's daf, a lot of wonderful chazara. So the following brisa was said over in front of Rav Sheshes, and that is Sheretz Matamis, Hamashke and Hamashke Matamis Sakli. V'kli matamis ha'ochlem, ha'ochlem matamis ha'mashkin, v'lamanu shalosh tumos b'sheretz. Sheretz obviously being an avatoma. So it in turn is going to be matame a mashke, that mashke is going to be rishon. The mashke in turn is going to be matame the kli. Now hopefully at this point in time you're thinking to yourself, that doesn't happen. Mashke is not matame kli. That is an excellent thought. We're going to come back to that in just a moment. But right now reading the b'raisa kipshuto, the kli now is a sheni, kli matamis ha'ochlem. The tamei kli is going to be matame ochel. That's now the that is now the shlishi ochel matame is a mashkin, and the ochel is going to be matame the mashke. That's going to be now a revi. V'lamanu shalosh tumos b'sheretz, and that gets us to shalosh tumos when it comes to a sheretz. Now, if we're talking about chulin over here, which presumably we are, so how do we get to three? Doesn't chulin stop at two? So Rashi over here points out that the author of this brisa is Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Kiva says that chulin goes up to three. Now, the Gemara points out over here that it's wonderful that we said three, but we counted it out, and it counts out as being four. After the sheretz, we have four items that are listed. So, honey, arba'ahein. So the Gemara had the obvious question. There are four mentioned over here. So what are you telling me, three? So the Gemara says, goes mashkin deresha. So the Gemara says, yeah, you know what? You're right. The Bryce is going to need some editing, so here's what we're going to do. Take out the first mashkin, meaning the sheretz is metameh, so just cut out the first mashkin. Meaning the first thing the sheretz was metame the kli, not the mashke. So the Gemara says, Adraba goes mashke to safe. The Gemara says, look, we just need to cut something out over here. Why don't we cut out the second mashke, the second reference of mashke, which came after the ochel, right? Number four on the list. So the Gemara says, no. Lo ashkechan tana damar mashke matam and kli. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, Ela Rebbe Yehuda v'hadarbei. So the Gemara says, look, no, it makes the most sense to cut out the first reference of mashke, because in the first part, the mashke is matame kli. No one says the mashke is matame kli. Now the Gemara says, now you remember there was a moment where we thought Rabbi Yehuda says that a mashke is matame kli. But also you're going to recall that Rabbi Yehuda was chosen from that position. Yud zainam and beis. So the Gemara here in our sugi, Rabbi Chanina's kind of kohanim, said that even though we do have a brisa that says that Rabbi Yehuda says that a mashke is matame kli, but Rabbi Yehuda had a charata, he was chosen from that position. Hopefully you recall, the question was, how much retraction did Rabbi Yehuda make? Good, that was the ensuing discussion in the Gemara over there. Vistimancha, so now, the way we have the brisa set up, so the sheretz is matame a kli, the kli in turn is matame nocha, nocha is matame mashke. Good. And this is going to be the transmission of Tumah. And again, just to remind each other, this is Aliba Deshitas Rabbi Kiva, who has three levels of Vlados after the Avatumah. The Gemara says, Vistimancha Nazyasya. Now the Gemara says, now you want a great way now to remember this? So just think about when you make beer. Now, unfortunately for most of us here in this room, so we're not beer manufacturers. I happen to know somebody here in our community who makes his own beer. Okay? And that's about the amount of information I'm ready to give away. But anyway, so the but nevertheless, we don't make beer. But if you know anything about beer making, which I don't, so what you do is that you take the barley and you put it into a kli, and then afterwards you add the liquid, and so therefore it is kli, barley, ochel, and then liquid mashke, right? Water, I guess. Okay, good. So you think about beer making, and then think about the brisa. Good. Tanan hasam. Well, more chazara for this morning. Okay, a Mishnah in Kalim. Sheretz shenimtza b'tanur. If I have a sheretz in an earthenware oven, hapasha b'socho shnia. So the bread that's also in the same interior airspace of the earthenware is going to be a shen mimnesha tanur tchila, because what the tanur becomes is the tanur becomes a rishon. Okay, this Mishnah in Kalim is the very basic halacha regarding the transmission of tumah within a kli cheres. Kli cheres is only metame b'tocho, not migavo. Only the interior airspace, and it's specifically the airspace, meaning once the sheretz goes into the interior airspace of the kli cheres, so then the kli cheres itself now receives the tumah. The sheretz obviously being an avatumah, the kli cheres now is the rishon. If there is also bread, even at the same time that the sheretz is inside, so now what's going to happen is that kli cheres is going to transmit the tumah from the kli to the bread. The kli itself is of rishon, the bread now is a sheni. That's the Mishnah in Kalim. It's really straightforward. But the Gemara has a wonderful question. So the Gemara says, you know what? I could look at it in the following manner. And that is that when the sheretz is in the interior airspace of the oven, the earthenware oven, so can't we say that the entire interior is filled with that tuma sheretz? And can't we then look at it as if there's an actual contact being made between the sheretz and the actual bread, making the bread not a sheni, but making the bread the arishon? It's such a wonderful question. Instead of viewing the tumah sheretz to be bouncing off the kli to the bread, why not simply say that the interior airspace conducts the tumah directly from the sheretz to the bread? So Amar Leilo Sagadacha says, no, it's just simply not how we're going to view it. I might have thought that all kelim should be metame from the avir kli cheres, from the interior airspace of a kli cheres. We have a drasha, and the drasha teaches us that if I have a kli inside the kli cheres, that kli is not going to become tame. Meaning that if I have a sheretz in the interior airspace of the kli cheres, and I have a kli inside also, so the kli is not going to become tamei. Now, if the proper way to view it is that in the interior airspace, it's direct contact, it's viewed as if we have direct contact from the sheretz to the kli, what happens when the sheretz touches the kli? Tuma. So why don't we say the same thing when the tuma is done via the air? So it must be that that's not how to look at that transmission of tuma. Rather, the way to view the transmission of tuma is basically bouncing off the off the kli cheres itself, meaning the kli cheres becomes a rishon, and then the kli and then any other kli inside of it is now going to only be receiving tuma from a rishon. But as we know, the rule is very clear: ein kli matame kli. One kli cannot be matame another kli. Okay, so now we know the proper way to view it, and it is not the interior airspace is not viewed as direct contact. Rav Chista, we are on the top of Chaf Amud Beis. We are now going to be going over a lot of review. Most of the remaining portion of today's daf is review from what we saw earlier. So this is a great opportunity for Chazara. Rav Chista, Rami Pischa, Pischa Mishan. Rav Chista noted a stira between one halacha of Tumah and another, and he gave the following resolution. Mi Amar Rav Yeshua Shem Ka'achas. Now Rav Yeshua says that we're going to be burning the two together, very minhu. Which two are we burning together? So this, we go all the way back to our Mishnah on Yadalam and Aleph. And you'll remember over there, Rabbi Yeshua gave an allowance. Sorf and Zula Asma, Bezula Asma. So, Rabbi Yeshua, lost my spot over here. Rabbi Yeshua Amar Shtem Ka'achas. That one can take Truma Tameya together with Truma Hatiluya, Truma that is possibly Tamei, with Truma that's definitely Tamei, and you can burn the two together. Umi Amar Rav Yeshua Shem Ka'achas. Now back to our Gemara Virmenu. The Gemara says, okay, but let's remember now another Braisa. Amar Rav Yossi Ein Ani Don Dama L'Raya. Rav Yossi says, don't compare. You can't compare the burning of Truma Tar and Truma Tameya to the case of Rabbi Chanina Sganik Ohanim. You'll recall, we quoted this Braisa at the beginning of the whole Sugya. Kishayidu Rabbi Sena Amayidu Im Al Abasar Shinima Bevlada Tumah Shesorfen Oso. The fact that you can burn meats together, both are tummy, one received its tumma from an av, another received its tumma from a vlad. Yeah, but zet tummy vizet tummy, but in those cases they're both tummy. Imal Hashem shenifsa betful yom shemad likinosa b'ner shenitma betummy meis, zet posav vizet tummy. And even my oil that was touched by its full yom, which was burned in a lantern that came into contact with an av tumma, okay, but they're both tummy. Okay, so the oil is puzzle. But puzzle just simply means that it can't transmit the tumah to something else, but it itself is tameh. So you're burning tumah together. And here's what I'll even give you: if the tumah becomes tameh with a vlad, I can burn that together with tumah that becomes tameh through an av. And I'll give that to you. And over here, but what are we talking about over here? You're going to burn together Tuluya with Tameya. Tuluya is only a state of suffix. And you know, even with the Tuluya, what may end up happening is Eliyahu Navi will come and it will tell us what exactly occurred, so that we will totally clarify the status of the Tuluya. The Tuluya may in fact be Tahora. So, over here, in this discussion between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir, so what's noted over here is that in the counter argument, you're not even allowed to burn together Tluya with Tameya. And in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yeshua gives full allowance to burn together Tluya and Tameya. O Mishani HaRabbi Shimon Ba'alibad Rabbi Yeshua HaRabbi Yossi Ba'alibad Rabbi Yeshua. So the Gemara says it is the later Tanayim who have differing viewpoints of what the earlier Tanayim said, did Tanya. The Gemara over here quotes another Braisa. Yudal Shechalios B'Shabbos. So let's say the 14th day of Nisan falls out on a Shabbos, like this coming year. Mirtz Hashem. So Mevarin es hakol melefnei haShabbos. So you're going to be doing the Bir Chametz before. You can't do Bir Chametz on Shabbos itself. So you're going to be doing the Bir before Shabbos. V'sorfen Truma Tameos Teluyos V'taros Divrei Rebbe Meir. And also all your Truma you're going to be burning before Shabbos. Obviously the Truma which is Chametz, you burn it before Shabbos. So whether it's Tamei or whether it is Suffolk or whether it's Tahor. Rabbi Yossi Omer. And Rabbi Yossi says, Tahora bifnei atzma, v'tuliya bifnei atzma, v'tmeya bifnei atzma. And Rabbi Yossi says that no, everything has to be burnt, but in separate piles. The tamei has to be burnt by itself, the Torah has to be burnt by itself, and interestingly enough, even the tuliya has to be burnt by itself, right, for reasons which are clear. I'm just not going to go through it right now. I'm Rabbi Shimon lo nechluku Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua la Torah v'al tamei she'ein sorfin, she'ein sorfin. So Rabbi Shimon's version of this debate is that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua both agree that Tahor and Tameya cannot be burned together. Ala Tuluya v'ala Torah shesorfin. And if it's Tuluya and Tahora, So they can be burnt together. It is only with safek together with tamea. Rabbi Eliezer says they're going to be burnt separate one another. Rabbi Yeshua Amar shteim ka'achas. And Rabbi Yeshua says that they are both to be burnt together. So what we just saw together, I know that was a long brisa, and that was a lot to keep straight, but we just saw together is that there are two different ways to understand the machlokas of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. And so if we have differing Tanaitic sources or different Tanaitic viewpoints, it's simply a reflection of the machlokas of the later Tanaim, of what the viewpoints are of the earlier Tanaim. So the Gemara says, V'amas nisim Rabbi Yosihi. So the Gemara says, okay, but when all said and done, look at the authorship of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is clearly representing the viewpoint of Rabbi Yossi. So now it's a bit of a problem. Hachi kamar, Rabbi Yossi le Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara says, okay, but here's how you understand the Mishnah. This is what Rabbi Yossi says to Rabbi Meir. Afilu Rabbi Shimon v'alibad Rabbi Yeshua demekel. He says, look, I myself have my own viewpoint of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. Fine. But even if we're going to subscribe with the more lenient viewpoint, i.e. Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint, and I know Rabbi Shimon and I don't see eye to eye about the machlokas of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. But even if I were to take Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint, who is more makel, ki makel betuliv etmeya, the limits of his leniency are only going to be in the case of Suffolk and Tameh. Ava betarot tmeya lo, but if it's tar and tmeya, so then under no circumstances. Meaning, Rabbi Yossi is just simply arguing a point. And even if I subscribe not to my viewpoint, but even to the more lenient viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon, my point is still a salient point. And that is nobody allows for the burning of Temeah, Truma Temeah, and Truma Torah together. And so therefore, your allowance on Erev Pesach to burn Truma Temeah and Truma Torah, there simply is no support for that position. That's the way to understand our Mishnah. And then the conflicting viewpoints of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer, where they agree and where they disagree. So it all comes down to the two differing later Tanaim's views of the Machlokas. The difference between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon and how they understood, how they received the Machlokas of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. We're continuing now in the Gemara. We are on Chaf Amud Beis, halfway down the Amud. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanin, and Rami Truma Apischa. Now with the Gemara approach that, another Stira. So we already dealt with one Stira on the Amud Beis, Rav Chista, and the Pischa Apischa. And now it's our second steer of Rabbi Yossi, Truma Pischa, Mishane. And he gives an answer. And the Gemara now tells us what the steer is. Rabbi Yeshua says that you can burn the two of them together. The Gemara says, consider the following, and that is the Mishnah. And we learned this Mishnah earlier. Chavishal Truma Shinola Bosafek Tuma. So let's say I have a barrel of Truma, possibly Tame. So Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Im Haisa Menechas Bamakom HaTorfa Yenechen Bamakom HaMutzav Im Haisa Megula Yechasenu. So Shitas Rabbi Eliezer is a safeguard, it's Tahara. Make sure it doesn't become Tameh. Now, it's Safek Tumah, but Rabbi Eliezer says there's still a mitzvah of Shmira. Earlier we understood this as to be a part of the drush of the Pasuk. Right? The Pasuk says that you're going to be Shomer Mishmar Tai. I'm sorry, Truma, sorry, Trumosai. You're going to be Shomer my Trumas. It said it in the plural. And as a result of the fact that it said it in the plural, and so therefore he understood it to mean that it's a reference to two types of Truma, Truma Tahara and Truma Temeya. This is a Rashi that takes us all the way back to Tezvav Amud Aleph. It really is excellent Chazara, by the way. And Rashi over here is quoting the Gemara in Bechoros. Fine. So the Achas, right, the Drasha is Mishmer's Truma Osai, Shtayim B'mashma. So the two types of Trumas that need Shmira. Achas Torah V'Achas Tuluya, whether it's Torah or whether it's Suffolk. Okay. So anyway, so according to Rabbi Eliezer, so it still needs Shmira even though it's a Suffolk. And back to our Gemara, Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Yimaisa Menuchas Memakam Mamutza Yenechen B'Makam Matorfa V'Yimaisa Mechusa Yigalena. And Shitas Rabbi Yoshua is accelerate the tumah process. Meaning, if it's covered, expose it. If it's put in a secure area, put it in an unsecure area. Let it become tameh. Okay, so now what we have over here is Rabbi Yeshua providing an allowance to go ahead and to be matameh. So So the Gemara says now that's a little bit difficult. Grama in biyadayim lo. Now here's the difficulty. Meaning Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah that we just learned together says, yes, you can accelerate the tumah process, but only indirectly. In other words, put it in an unsecure location. Uncover it. Only indirect acceleration is fine, but to actively b'metame, no, Rabbi Yeshua would not allow it. And meanwhile, in our Mishnah here, in Psachim, what did we learn together? We learned together that Rabbi Yeshua allows you to take the tzluya and burn it together with the tameya. And that is direct, that's direct tumah. That's not indirect. So that's the problem. Umishani, Rabbi Shimon, Aliba de Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yossi, Aliba de Rabbi Yeshua. And so the Gemara's answer is, again, it's just simply a function of the differing viewpoints of the later Tanaim of how to understand the machlokas of the earlier Tanaim. Okay, good. And now this is going to be our third stira of the morning. Rabbi Al-Azhar Rami Truma, Atruma Umishani. Rabbi Lazar notes the stira between Mishnayos and Truma, and he offers the following answer. Umi Amar Rabbi Yeshua Grama in Biyadayim Lo. So we just learned together that according to Rabbi Yeshua, in the case of the barrel that possibly becomes Tameh, the barrel of Truma that possibly becomes Tameh, so Bigrama, you can allow it to become Tameh. Right, put it in an unsecure location. Expose it, but that's it. Over in Menu, the Gemara says, but I will ask you now another question from a Mishnah. And Baruch Hashem, we saw this Mishnah just a couple of days ago. So you recall this Mishnah where you had Truma wine, which was Tahor, and it was going to go down into the pit. Right now it's in the upper vat. And it's going to go down into the pit, and lo and behold, in that lower pit, what do you have? You have Chulin, and you have Chulin, which is Tameh. Now, if we allow nature to take its course and gravity to allow the Truma to go down, the Truma Tahor is going to meet up with the Chulin Tamein. So number one, it's going to be Dimua. It's going to be a mixture of Chulin and Truma. And number two, it's going to be Tameh. And that is going to and that's going to be a significant loss for everybody. As far as the Kohanim are concerned, they're no longer going to be able to eat it. As far as the Yisrael is concerned, that Chulin Tameah, that the wine on the bottom of the pit prior to the Truma going into it was perfectly drinkable. In other words, it's just Chulin Tameh. Chulin Tameh. So you and I could drink it. Fine. So if we allow the Truma wine to go down into the bottom of the pit, so we're going to end up with a lot of hefsed. So according to Rabbi Yeshua, what you could do is that if you can't, and now if you can salvage some of the Truma and a minimum a revius of it, so we have no machlokas, so there you have to salvage. But if you can't salvage any of the Truma, so then what you must do, according to Rabbi Yeshua, is take a kli tameh. There's no other kli available. You take a kli tameh and you capture the Truma in the kli tameh so it doesn't go down into the pit. Even though in doing so, you're going to be actively being metameh the Truma. So the stira, in the previous Mishnah in Trumos, we said that according to Rabbi Yeshua, the only thing you could do is just grama, indirect. Over here, what you can do is biyadayim. You can directly be metame. So the umishani, the Gemara says shani hasam dika efsechulin. So the Gemara says okay, but once again, you look at each of the cases and contextually understand the difference. And that is in the case of the wine going down into the pit. So we're looking at a significant loss. And since we're looking at a significant loss, so under these circumstances, normally Rabbi Yeshua said that the only thing you could do is just grama, indirect. But over here, because of the significant loss, so therefore, afilo biyadayim. So maskev l'rava masnisa nami ika hefsed eitzim. So the Gemara says, what about our Mishnah? If we're going to have to burn the Truma Tameh and the Truma Teluya in two different piles, that we're going to have to get more wood. And isn't that a hefsed? So hopefully you remember the answer we gave already earlier in this perek. We're giving it again. So what are we talking about? When you're talking about the loss of wine, that's a significant hefsed. If we're talking about just getting another pile of wood in order to make a separate fire, so it's another pile of wood. couple dollars. It's not a significant hefsted. This distinction to be made between hefsted meruba versus hefsted muat. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you where we see this distinction. Let's take a look together at this price. Chavishal shem and truma. So I have a barrel of oil of truma. Shenishbara begas al yona v'tachton echulun tamein. And once again, it's in the upper vat, and it's ready to go down into the pit. Now on the bottom of the pit, you have chulun tamein. Mode Rabbi Eliezer, li Rabbi Yoshua, shim yachol atzel mimenu revius betar yatzel. Now here, Rabbi Eliezer says to Rabbi Yoshua, here's what I'm going to give you. And that is, if we could salvage any of the truma, obviously you salvage it. But if you can't salvage any of the truma in a state of tahara, the imlav teri v'titame v'al yitamenu biyad. And so now Rabbi Eliezer says, and let's highlight, this is Rabbi Eliezer talking. Previously, Rabbi Yoshua was the one who gave the allowance. But in this case, Rabbi Eliezer said that you can go ahead and take your tamei kli and intercept the oil before it goes down into the bottom of the pit. Now, when the discussion was revolving around wine, so what did Rabbi Eliezer said? Okay, you don't be matami biyadayim, right? You can't stop the wine from going down to the bottom of the pit if you're going to end up being matami the wine. Over here by the oil, be matami the oil. So, maishna shemen derai lahadlik yainami rai lezilof. So the Gemara says, now, when it comes to shemen, so what's going to be the consequence? So what the consequence is going to be? Let me just go back. I'm sorry. I made a mistake. So Amarlay, I'm sorry. Modi Rabbi Lazar Rav Shushi Mechal Atzel Mimena Revius Betar Yatzel V'Imlav Tered V'Titamei V'Al Yitamena Biyad. Okay, fine. I'm sorry. Now I see my mistake. Let's go back. Let's say it over correctly. And that is that the oil go down and Al Yitamena Biyad and don't be Matami Biyadayim. So the Gemara says Maishna Hashem and Derai Lahadlik. So the Gemara now explains. Okay, good. Now all of this is clear. And why? Because look, what's going to happen if the shemen becomes tamei? Okay, so you can't drink the shemen, but you could still use it for fuel. Meaning when you have truma tamea, so while burning it, while disposing of it, so what you could do is you can get benefit. Hana is allowed to be received during the beer. Now the hana and the beer have to be coming at the same time. Okay, for another sugya for another day. But anyway, but you're allowed to get benefit while burning it. And so the shemen, right, lahadlik. So the Gemara says, okay, let me ask you, let's go back to the case of the wine. And therefore what? And therefore by the case of the shemen, we're talking about not a significant loss. The difference between the ability to drink the oil versus using the oil for illumination. The difference in loss and financial loss is not that significant. So the Gemara says, yayin nami rai lezilof. So the Gemara says, okay, but you know what? With the wine, even if the wine becomes tummy, you know what we could do with the wine? So we could sprinkle the wine in order to create an aroma. The Gemara says, now, what are you going to tell me? That's just simply not significant. So the Gemara says, now, you know that that if you're going to buy wine, so a lug of wine for drinking, that's a sela. A lug of wine for zilof, for creating the aroma, that's two slime. So what are you telling me? It's not financially significant. It's really significant. So even if our wine were to go down into the pit, and even if the truma wine would become tamei, we could still use it for zilof, and the Gemara now is trying to argue it's not such a big financial loss. So the Gemara says, bichadash. Oh, okay, fine. So the Gemara says, we're talking about new wine. New wine is not aromatic. V'arai liyashno. So the Gemara says, yeah, okay, fine. New wine is not aromatic. So here's what we could do. You could just let it sit around for a while, and let it ferment even more, becoming even more aromatic. Can't you do that? Asi bali de takala. So the Gemara says, no, leaving it around, no good. Because if you leave truma wine around, that is tamei. So a person is going to end up mistakenly drinking it. So shemen nami asi bali de takala. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the oil, we're talking about using the oil for fuel, for illumination. So isn't that going to be a takala as well? Someone may end up drinking it. So the Gemara says, "Derei melei b'kli ma'os." So the Gemara says, "Yeah, you know how you prevent that? You take the oil and you put it into a dirty kli, so no one's going to drink it. And the only thing that's going to be used for is only for burning and illumination. Yainami ramile bekli mas. Can we do the same thing with wine? Lezilof kabayile bekli mas ramile. The Gemara says that's ridiculous. You're looking to make some sort of aromatic scent from the wine, and you're going to put it into a kli mas. You're not going to do that. Okay. So and here's going to be our stopping point, because this is going to be the end of the Gemara's resolution of this third and final stira. Let's review our daf. We went over the case of that Mishnah in Adios, where you shechted an animal in the Beis HaMikdash in the Azara, a carbon, and you found a needle inside of it. And the Mishnah Adios says that the Basar is tamei, but the Adayim and the Kli are going to be tahor. And if you find the needle in the excrement, so everything is going to be tahor, even the meat's going to be a tahor. And Rabbi Kiva, that Mishnah says zachinu baruch Hashem, that there's no tumas yadayim in the Beis HaMikdash. This needle that's found inside of the animal, isn't it a case of a suffik kli? And don't we say suffik kli is tahor in Yerushalayim as per the Mishnah and Shkalim? So good, that's where we started off this morning. And to that, the Gemara gave two answers: Rabbi Yehuda Merav versus Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yavin. And the Gemara sat a little bit more on the answer of Rabbi Yehuda Merav. The needle under discussion was known to be a needle that came into contact with Tumas Mace, and since we now have a history of the needle, that's why it's going to be Tame. If the needle came into contact with Tumas Mace, aren't we now talking about where the needle is an Avatuma, and now aren't we looking at a Suffolk Tuma of an Avatuma? So the Gemara's answer is, yes, we are, but it's in the Azara, and so therefore it is Suffolk Tuma versus Rabin. Sfeiko is going to be Tahor. Which means that the needle is falling under the category of Safik Tumma versus Rabim. Doesn't that have to have Dasli Sha'ol? And the Gemara's response is that since the needle is being handled by a person, so therefore the Das of the person is extended into the needle, affording the needle the same halachas of Tumma versus Rabim versus Tumma versus Yach. Good. The meat becoming Tameh. How did the meat become Mukhshel Kabel Tumma? That was the Gemara in Chafam and Alf. The Gemara gave four answers to that question. If the needle is found in the excrement, so everything is tahor, the meat's tahor, why isn't the needle being metame the excrement in turn being metame the basar? And the answer the Gemara settles on is because the excrement just simply does not have the status neither of an ochel nor a mashke. It's simply not edible, not drinkable. We quoted a Mishnah about a sheretz being metame a kli, which is metame anocha, which is metame amashka. Okay, we added to that brisa, and that brisa was going like Rabbi Akiva. The sheretz, the Mishnah in Kalim, a sheretz found in a tanur, and then there is a food in that tanur. The food becomes a sheni. Okay, and what we don't say, and the Gemara made this point clear as we are on the top of the Amud Beis in review, and what we don't say is that we don't say that the interior airspace of the kli cheres allows for a direct contact between the sheretz and the bread that's inside, but rather it is bouncing, the tumah is bouncing off the wall, and so therefore the bread is a sheni. The kli itself is a rishon, the bread now is a sheni. There are three stiras on the Amud Beis that we dealt with: a stira between Mishnah and Psachim, a stira or a Mishnah and a Braisa Psachim, a stira between a Mishnah and Psachim and that in Truma, and a stira between two Mishnayos and Trumos, and the Gemara resolves all three stiras, and that is our daf. Tomorrow, we pick it up at the very bottom, the Takala Atma Tanaihi, the idea that we're worried about a disaster occurring with Truma Tameya. It's going to end up becoming a Machlokas Tanaim. That's where we start tomorrow morning, tomorrow afternoon. Anyway, everyone have a wonderful Shabbos.